Good morning, everybody. My name is Chris. I have a husband, Paul, sitting down over there, and two very lovely small children who hopefully are not tearing up the kids program too much. Our reading this morning is from Luke chapter 19, verses 1 to 10. Jesus entered Jericho and was passing through. A man was there by the name of Zacchaeus. He was a chief tax collector and was wealthy. He wanted to see who Jesus was, but because he was short, he could not see over the crowd. So he ran ahead and climbed a sycamore fig tree to see him, since Jesus was coming that way. When Jesus reached the spot, he looked up and said to him, "Zacchaeus, come down immediately. I must stay at your house today." So he came down at once and welcomed him gladly. All the people saw this and began to mutter, "He has gone to be the guest of a sinner." But Zacchaeus stood up and said to the Lord, "Look, Lord, here and now I give half of my possessions to the poor, and if I have cheated anybody out of anything, I will pay them back four times the amount." Jesus said to him, "Today salvation has come to this house, because this man too is a son of Abraham. For the Son of Man came to seek and to save the lost."
Thanks, Chris. Well, good morning, friends. It's great to be with you this morning. My dad was a great fan of the Sydney Motor Show. It's a two-week festival of cars. New cars, prototype cars, futuristic cars, old classic cars, all converged on the old Sydney showground right next to the SCG. And my dad used to go to the motor show for multiple days before he was married. After he was married, he would go to the motor show for multiple days, usually by himself. And then when he had kids, he could not wait to take us to the motor show. And I vividly remember the day I got my chance. I was so excited. I jumped into the Mitsubishi Magna because my dad loved cars but could not bear spending any money on cars. And away we went into the city. And as I drove away, I'm sure I saw just a flash of fear on my mum's face as her precious firstborn son disappeared off to a festival of cars where thousands upon thousands of people were attending. And her anxiety was not without cause. It was probably 1980 and I was seven, and Dad and I wandered around the exhibitions together. We were wowed by the roaring of engines together. We stared at all the new colours that cars came in together. We saw brands and models of cars that we'd never ever heard of together. And then in one pavilion, I saw just across the way a car whose doors opened upwards rather than outwards. And I was amazed. And I wandered over to this silver beauty alone. A door that opened upwards. What an incredible prospect. Never again will my mum have to say, "Watch the car next to you when you open the door." The door would just rise and I would be safe. And I turned to tell my dad this, and he was gone. I was alone amidst the bustling throng of people. My dad was nowhere to be seen. I stopped, I stood, I waited, I looked. My dad was nowhere. So I did the only logical thing any seven-year-old kid would do. I walked back to the car, in the car park. I walked out of the gates I walked across the road, I walked into the Moore Park parking area, and I sat down next to the car because I was certain that at the car, my dad would find me. And so there I was in the grassy parking lot, seated and waiting. Sometime later, someone walked past me and asked, "Are you lost?" And I said, "Nope, I'm just waiting for my dad." I thought, what a ridiculous question. I know exactly where I am. I'm at the car. And there was no end to the procession of people who came past. "Are you lost?" "No, I'm right here at the car." To my mind, the idea that I was in some way lost was just ridiculous. I knew exactly where I was. But of course, I was lost. I was lost from my dad. I was lost from the one who loved me. And I needed him to find me, to come to me, to seek me out. Indeed, I was lost, but I didn't know it. Well, the look on my dad's face when he did briskly walk through the car park with a policeman in tow let me know quite a number of things. His words also let me know quite a number of things. To this day, I'm not sure my mum ever found out what happened on that day. But let me tell you what I found out that day. You can be completely lost and not know it. Like me. Lost from my father, lost from the one who loved me, and I didn't have a clue. And friends, that describes the situation every single human being finds themselves in with God. Me, you, the person sitting next to you, lost. Lost from the one who loves you. Lost from God, even if you don't know it. Lost also describes Zacchaeus, this guy that was in the story that was just read to us. He's a wealthy chief tax collector who we hear about in the Bible. And as the scene opens, I sort of picture a short, plump man running skittishly, dashing around behind a crowd lined up on the road like people have been lined up to see the Queen and the Queen's coffin over this last week. He's looking for a gap among the people that he can squeeze himself into so that he might be able to see Jesus, who's going to be walking through the town of Jericho. But he has no height. He's as short as short, and he can't use his height, therefore, to see over others. He has no friends. He has no one saving him a place and no one willing to save him a place because Zacchaeus is the chief tax collector. Now, you might not like what the ATO does to your pay packet, but that is just the beginning with Zacchaeus. With the power and authority of the oppressive Roman Empire in his pocket, tax collectors like him fleeced as much as they could from their townspeople and friends. Rather than defend Jericho from oppression, Zacchaeus was the sort of guy who actually brought financial oppression upon his friends and upon his town, and so he was despised by the people. No one was letting him through. And so when everyone heard that Jesus was going to pass through the town, no one was helping Zacchaeus. But that wasn't going to stop him. His curiosity about who Jesus was drove him to run ahead of the procession and climb a sycamore tree so he could see Jesus, who was heading in that direction. That the scene is almost comical, and it ends with a short, fat, despised man up a tree trying to satisfy his curiosity. But as Jesus comes along toward that tree, everything is going to change. Let's listen again to what happens. This is from Luke 19, one of the biographies of Jesus, and it says this: when Jesus reached the spot, he looked up and said to him, "Zacchaeus, come down immediately. I must stay at your house today." So he came down at once and welcomed Jesus gladly. I wonder if you can just imagine the flabbergasted crowd. The despised tax collector, the one who ensures everyone in the town stays in financial oppression, has been invited to host Jesus, by Jesus. And he's going to do it gladly. Now, this is Jesus, the man who heals the sick. This is Jesus, the one who gives sight to the blind and stops storms and shows love to the poor, the downcast, the hopeless and helpless. In the storyline of this biography of Jesus, just moments ago, a man who was completely blind, a blind beggar, had called out to Jesus and Jesus had healed him. But now, Jesus, who's shown so much love to a man who deserved it, well, Jesus is now saying, I'm now going to engage with the rich oppressor, the despised, most un-Jesus-like person in the crowd, in the town. And you can understand that the people who saw this would think that Jesus is really confusing. Is he for the poor or is he for the rich? Is he for the good? Is he for the bad? And indeed, they are confused. That they say to each other, all the people saw what happened and began to mutter, he's gone to be the guest of a sinner. And it's right for us to think, what is Jesus' game? How do we understand what's going on here? Why would he one minute be caring for the poor and the next minute be luxuriating with the rich? Well, the answer is in the verse that we've heard a few times today. The end of this little section in Luke 19, verse 10, and it says this, the Son of Man came to seek and to save the lost. You see, by his actions and now his words, Jesus is making this thing clear. All people have a shared problem. No matter who you are, no matter what you've done, no matter how you think about yourself, you are loved, but lost. Loved by God, but lost from God. And Jesus came to seek you out. Let me unpack this a little bit. If we were to read through the whole biography of Jesus that Luke's put together here, this little excerpt comes from, we'd see that Jesus seeks out and speaks with both rich and poor. He seeks out and speaks with religious and non-religious. He seeks and speaks to people who have it all together and people who are a mess. He speaks to people from this country and people from that country. Jesus, when he was walking upon the earth, sought out everyone. And he seeks out everyone because he wants everyone to know that they're lost, lost from God. And he doesn't just seek out people then. Through Jesus' message in the Bible, Jesus comes to seek out me and you. We're all lost from God. And for the same reason Zacchaeus was. The crowd called him a sinner. And they were right. Jesus calls me a sinner. And he's right. Jesus calls you a sinner. Now, it's such a religious word, isn't it, sin? But Jesus talked about it a lot. And when he did, he didn't just talk about wrong things that people do. It was bigger than that and deeper than that. He talked about a wrong attitude to God and life. He talked about a problem that we have all the way through to our hearts. You see, if God created us to live this way, But we live that way, then we sin. We're lost from God. If God created us to think like this, but we actually think like this, we sin. We're lost from God. If God created us to love him and to listen to him, but we don't, we sin. And we're lost from him. Now, in my experience of talking to people about this idea, I found that many people think sin is not really a major problem. Indeed, people think of it like this, that we're all on a ladder between good and bad. And what really matters is your place on the ladder. And so, when we do good things, we get to go up the ladder a bit. And when we do bad things, well, we get to go down the ladder a bit. And somehow people believe that God has a minimum standard, And that one day he's going to send those below the minimum standard down to hell, and those people who are above the minimum standard, well, God is going to take those people up to heaven. And my experience is, in talking to people, most people think they're above the minimum standard. Now, friends, this is simply untrue. God's minimum standard is perfection. We're called to love him and to love others perfectly. You can never do enough to please God. And you can never do enough to make it to heaven. As good as you might claim to be, the moment you're not perfect for the first time, you're not welcome. And you're lost from God. And Jesus came to make this clear, clear to me and clear to you. By his actions and words, Jesus says, no matter who you are loved but lost. Loved by God but lost from God. You're a sinner, deserving of eternal death. Now, the people in Jericho thought only Zacchaeus belonged in that category. Jesus says, we all do. They're going to say, if that's all Jesus did, if all Jesus did was just be a harbinger of doom, if he just came to seek out the lost and say, you're lost, unworthy to be in heaven, Jesus would not be worth our time, would he? Indeed, if that's all Jesus did is point out that we're lost, then really it's time to eat, drink and be merry, because tomorrow we die and it doesn't sound like that's going to be a really good thing. But let me tell you, that is not all Jesus did. He did not just come to sort of point out the condition we're in, the state we're in, the problem we have. No, Jesus came to fix the condition we're in, to fix the problem we have. Yes, he came to tell us we are loved but lost. But look again at verse 10 in this story. Jesus says there, the Son of Man came to seek and to save the lost. There's a solution to our problem, and the solution is Jesus. There is a solution to our problem. We can be found and saved, and so by Jesus. You see, Jesus spent time with sinners like Zacchaeus because he had something for them. Jesus spent time with sinners like me because he came to save sinners like me from eternal death. Jesus knew that we could never do enough or be enough for God. But his life was enough. And indeed, Jesus is enough. So at the cross, he saved me. A few years back while I was doing the shopping, a child I know quite well happened to give a shopping trolley full of Easter goodies an extra push in the centre car park. And that little extra push resulted in the smashing of the rear tail light of the adjacent car. So we got in our car and sped off as quickly as possible. No, we didn't. It's all right, just so you know. I'm one of those people who leaves a note. And I got a phone call, and I committed to a $375 bill for a tail light. I turned to my three-year-old child. It's your fault. Pay up. They offered me Lego. Of course, the child has no way of paying a debt like that. And so I paid it. I took what she owed and paid the price myself. And that's what Jesus has done for us. He took what I owed and paid the price himself. He saved me by taking sin from me. He saved me by taking the suffering I deserved for me. He saved me by dying instead of me. He paid the price for my sin, so I don't have to. And he did all that at the cross. At the cross and in his death, Jesus experienced the punishment we deserve for our sin instead of us. At the cross and in his death, he experienced the isolation from God that we deserve, and he did it for me, and he did it for you. He did it instead of us. He did it so we could be saved. And then incredibly, Jesus did not stay dead, but he rose from the dead to show that indeed our sin has been dealt with, and he came to give us life and lead us into life filled with hope because we've been saved from our sin. And now he says, come trust in me. Come follow me. Come receive salvation from me. Come and find hope in me. And indeed, that's exactly what Zacchaeus does in this story. Zacchaeus came and received salvation. He was saved. In our story, we read in verse 9, Jesus said to him, today salvation has come to this house because this man too is a son of Abraham. Sort of a little bit weird words, hard to understand, but Abraham was the first to trust in God. Abraham was the first to receive salvation from God by trusting in God, the first to be saved. And Jesus declares here in this verse that Zacchaeus has done the same. He's come. He's trusted in the promise of God's salvation at the cross. And now he joins this family of Abraham, of all who trust in him and are saved. And in response, Zacchaeus turns away from sin. In response, he does everything he can to now serve God with his life. In response, he does right by all those he has defrauded. It says there in verse 8, Zacchaeus stood up and said to the Lord, look, Lord, here and now I give half my possessions to the poor. And if I've cheated anybody out of anything, I will pay back four times the amount. But those actions don't save him. Only Jesus can save him. But those actions are the right response to being saved. Zacchaeus turns to a life with God and for God rather than without God and lost from God. He seeks to turn things around and live loving God and loving others, making restitution where he's done wrong. He turns away from the sin that brought death to live a life following Jesus. Because at the cross, we were saved. And through the cross and from the cross, we are changed. Many years ago now, I was saved at that very same cross. Not because of good things that I had done. Not because I was a little kid who went to church. Not because I was baptized, not because I gave generously to other people, not because I had a religious family. But I was saved only because the sin driving me towards death was taken by Jesus. Only because Jesus came and died for me. Only because I trust in him and his death for me. And I too am a son of Abraham. Only because I believed he saved me from my sin. Zacchaeus met Jesus and was saved and changed. I met Jesus and was saved and changed. And I wonder if today is the day for you to come to Jesus and to be saved and changed. He loves you, even though you are lost. But Jesus came to seek and to save the lost. And Jesus says to you, come. I want you to be saved. Now, perhaps as you're sitting there this morning, you're actually more like Zacchaeus than you think. That you're sort of sitting up in a tree trying to work out what Jesus is really all about. And perhaps this morning you're wondering, is this the time for me to respond to his call? Perhaps you realize for the first time today that indeed you are lost. Perhaps you now see that Jesus has come and found you. and that you can believe and be saved. You know, some people hear this message and they stay up in the tree. They keep watching, unsure whether this is really for them. Well, let me urge you this morning to come down. Come down and come to Jesus. Because Jesus is enough. No matter what your thoughts on Jesus, we want to keep walking with you and helping you work him out. And in a few moments, I'll share some things that you can do to keep working Jesus out. But for now, I want to just speak to the people in the room here this morning who are ready to come. I want to speak to those people who are watching online with us, who are ready to come. I want to speak to those today who for the first time have seen that Jesus came to seek and to save the lost, who've recognized they are lost. Are you ready to put your faith in Jesus and be saved from sin? If yes, then it is time to move from loved but lost to found and saved. You need only come to Jesus. And friends, we do that in prayer. We speak to him. And I've written this prayer for people to pray who are ready to come to Jesus, to be found and to be saved. There's nothing special about these particular words, but they express the realities that we've looked at today. The realities Zacchaeus came to see, the realities that perhaps you've come to see today. I'm going to read it out for us, and you can think about whether this prayer is right for you as I just read it out. Dear God, I've seen today that I'm loved by you, but lost from you because of my sin. I'm sorry for my sin and the way I've lived without you, thinking I was enough alone. Please forgive me. Thank you for sending Jesus to die on the cross to save me. Help me to turn to you, to live for you, and to be changed. Amen. Can I say, if that prayer is right for you, then I'm going to pray it again slowly, and as I do, why don't you pray alone with me, just silently in your own mind. And if this prayer is not right for you, can I encourage you this morning to pray a prayer that is right for you? So how about we pray together? Dear God, I've seen today that I am loved by you, but lost from you because of my sin. I'm sorry for my sin and the way I have lived without you, thinking I was enough alone. Please forgive me. Thank you for sending Jesus to die on the cross to save me. Help me to turn to you, to live for you, and to be changed. Amen. Well, can I say to you that if you prayed that prayer this morning for the first time, a prayer like that, that God has heard your prayer and you are saved. You are a child of Abraham. You are one who is welcome into the Lord's heaven. And we rejoice with you and give thanks for you and for God's work in your life. God has heard your prayer and your sin is lifted and you are found. We want to rejoice with you and we want to help you continue to walk forward trusting in Jesus. And the best way for us to do that is actually for us to fill in the little card together and for you to let us know your response to this morning. Now, I want everyone to fill in the card. So can everyone grab a card and lift it up and hold me, show me that you've got a card. I want everyone to see it. For those people who are watching online, in a few moments after we watch a video, there'll be a form for you to fill in and respond as well. But listen along because it'll help you understand how to fill the card in. And the reason I want everyone to fill it in is because if the only people filling it in are those people who've made a response this morning, that's a little bit embarrassing. We're all staring at sort of a few. So if we all fill it in, then everyone is able to do that and no one will be embarrassed. So I'm going to fill it in up here as well. I'm going to write my name. My name is Nigel. This morning I came with my black bag. Who did you come with this morning? You can put that down. Now, in the next little box there, it says, my experience of today has been, if you prayed that prayer this morning, I want you just to write there, I prayed that prayer. You just write in that little box there, I prayed that prayer. And let me assure you, we will make contact with you in the next day or so and help you continue walking forward following Jesus. We love to do that here at Christchurch St Ives. It is such a delightful thing for us to do, is to welcome new Christian people into our church and fellowship, into the life of Jesus. So just write in there, I prayed that prayer, or whatever your other experience has been of church this morning. And then there are a number of other little boxes below. And the first two detail are there for people who are still in the tree. If you're still in the tree, we love you. And we want to help you actually continue to work Jesus out like Zacchaeus. So the second box is, I have some doubts or questions that I'd like to explore. If you tick that box, then we'll have someone ring you and make a time to actually sit with you and to explore things. But the first box is about Question Life. Now, Question Life is a four-week course in which we give you the opportunity to come together with others and to think deeply about who Jesus is